All right, nice to have you back with us on this Saturday night. And Bruce Jenkins joins us, and I will say this. Bruce says probably the biggest week coming up of anybody in Bay Area baseball in the last 2 months, because he is going to be managing the NorCal team, I think, against on APBA computer baseball, one day at a time. And we've waited and waited for the drama of baseball, and you put it together. This is very exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I've got a terrible feeling if we lose the first two at home, they're going to want Billy Martin in there instead of me. It really is exciting. I mean, you think about it. I came up with this in, like, 1977. I'm on the Chronicle desk. I don't think I'm ever going to write. I'm on the desk. I kind of like it. But I've got a lot of time on my hands, and I start coming up with this plan because I'm an APBA player. It's like Stratomatic. If you know Stratomatic, it's kind of the same thing. And instead of just playing, you know, the last season or whatever, all with all the teams, you know, what if it was the whole country and all the best players from all around the country, and not just where they're born, but where are they from? You know, who produces the best players? And let's play it out in APBA. And I actually did that. It took me, you know, at least 10 years to come up with the rosters and be totally accurate as far as where they actually, you know, did grow up. It just kind of sat around forever, and all of a sudden now it's exploded. I brought it up a couple months ago, and next thing you know, once the LA Times and the Chronicle got a hold of it, you know, we're going online with it. It's a best of seven. Everybody can watch the video of it. And John Miller is going to do some stuff, and it's just great.
It's fabulous. I'm telling you, Bruce, of the last 2 months, this is the biggest baseball thing we've had, and you're managing. You're managing Ricky Henderson, Barry Bonds, and Frank Robinson, et cetera.
You and I'm sure a lot of readers can appreciate what it means to actually finally come up with these teams and start playing where you don't have Dirty Al Gallagher at third. You got Eddie Matthews, or maybe George Brett, or maybe Nolan Arenado sneaks in there. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just it involves all the great players with a little extra research to let people know where they actually grew up. Just an example, Marty. I came up with like 30 guys from Southern California who were born in different states, like including Brett and Walter Johnson. I mean, Eddie Matthews, on and on and on. And if you just took it by what states they're from, it doesn't tell you anything. You know, you wouldn't get Joe Morgan or Frank Robinson or Willie Stargell from the East Bay. Well, of course you would. They'd be on the Northern California team if you really looked at it. So that's really where I took it an extra mile, and it's paying off.
Well, now the lineups were put together by Gabe Kapler and Dave Roberts. In other words, the voting took place, and, you know, you got the right? The vote, people were voted in. Is that it? And then,
yeah,
then they made – all right, now – Gabe Kapler. Now, of course, we've never seen him manage a game here. Who knows what he's going to do when it all starts, believe me. He's got Joe DiMaggio hitting fifth. Come on, please.
Yeah, you know, I'm managing the team, and now I got to look at Joe DiMaggio, okay? Gabe's out of it now. He's off in at a fishing with a fishing pole. I got to look at Joe DiMaggio and go, Joe, we don't know each other, but you're batting fifth, and all right away.
I'm sorry.
When I drew it up, before Gabe got involved, just fantasizing, Joe hits third, and then you figure everything else from there, okay?
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, and Frank Robinson's hitting fifth. He flipped it around. But I guarantee you in game two, unless Joe gets hurt and is out for seven games, which can happen in APBA, he's going to be hitting third.
Very good. All right, so you got Ricky Henderson, Bonds, Frank Robinson, Stargell, DiMaggio, Joe Morgan, Caminiti, Tulowitzki, and Ernie Lombardi. So that's your team. Who do you have on the other side? Do you have the Southern Cal lineup?
Yeah, let's see. I don't have it. I can get it in front of me here in a minute. But one of the interesting things that Dave Roberts did was in picking his third baseman. He bypassed Brett, and everybody's in his best year, so you got Brett hitting 390 in 1980, and Eddie Matthews, you know, with the 53 Braves, for heaven's sake, and went with Arenado. But the way it goes, he's got Jackie Robinson leading off at second, Ted Williams hitting second and left, Eddie Murray ahead of Mark McGuire at first, But McGuire is a DH, hitting 70 homers in cleanup spot. Nomar Garciaparra hitting 372 for the Red Sox. Gets to start over Ozzie Smith at short. And then Duke Snider in center, Arenado at third. Tony Gwynn hitting eighth because we're going with Randy Johnson. And as Dave Roberts admitted, I got to tell Tony Gwynn's son, I know your dad never hit eighth, but bear with me here. And then the catcher is Gary Carter, and he's going to start the Big D, Don Drysdale, followed by Walter Johnson, who never was second banana to anybody, but that's just the way it goes. And Jim Palmer, and then Kapler came up with Randy Johnson, you know, great choice. Tom Seaver, of course. C.C. Sabathia, who he was passionate about picking third. And my quarrel there is that I've got to have Dave Stewart. I mean, I just do.
Come on.
But he might pitch game four, and if he pitches well in game four, I'll guarantee he's pitching game seven.
Look, Gabe Kapler put DiMaggio fifth, and he's got C.C. Sabathia pitching third, and he's got Lefty Gomez and Stewart. And
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah,
I hope this is not the sign of things to come here.
Well, I'm going to make it right. I hope we win the first game in spite of all this, and then I can take over, and, well, I might just screw it up worse. But
so what kind of a manager are you?
Well, I'm patient yet violently aggressive, Marty. I'm Billy Martin. I've got it all together until I don't. But no, I try to look at this thing. You know, my upbringing is Walter Alston, and then, you know, coming up here, Bruce Bochy. I was around Billy Martin an awful lot, but, you know, he was a guy who one time he just said, I'm just going to put all the names in a hat, you know, and we'll pull them out, and Mickey Klutz is hitting fourth, you know. So I can't pretend to be that, but I try to be reasonable, and, you know, if somebody goes 0 for 9, I'm going to go with somebody else. I'm not going to pull guys like managers today do after six innings. Are you kidding? I'm going to pull Dave Stewart or Lefty Gomez if they got a nice game going. That would never happen. There's not going to be a parade of relief pitchers, just at all. And I'm going to go. It's nice that we're going with three-man rotations because that's the way it was in World Series for forever, really. I mean, you could pitch games 1, 4, and 7, and so it's going to be great. I guess we'll see what kind of a manager I am because everybody's going to be able to watch this. If you tune in, and it'll be all explained to fans how you do this. But it's basically just go to sfchronicle.com, and you can find out how to watch a video of how the game went down every night. It's basically you're looking at a graphic of a ballpark, you know, with a scoreboard and cards, and it shows you who's playing, and then you can hear me and Houston Mitchell dictating what we're doing, and then there'll
be great.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, I could never imagine this happening in the 70s when all I wanted to do was play a tournament by myself. And by the way, I've got the whole country here. I've got Texas, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, the Deep South, New England, 40 deep, man. I'm ready to go.
So go to sfchronicle.com and go to the sports section.
Yeah, if you're a print subscriber, you know, the game stories will appear the day after. They won't be in a lot of detail, I think, as we have so little space and you never know what's going to be in the news. But
right.
You will be able to find out what happened. I'm hoping we can run box scores. That might be a little ambitious, but if you're into the internet and you're an online subscriber, you can really watch how the whole thing happened in great detail and maybe hear a little John Miller.
Okay, and do we have a time when this is on, starting on Tuesday night? Do we know?
3 a.m., Marty. No, it's so
make
convenient.
It simple.
No, I haven't. We haven't come up with when the first game will be on, but because you don't exactly know, because we're going to, you know, how long it's going to take. But it'll be, it should be in the paper and online on Tuesday.
All right. Well, this is, first of all, I will tell you this, you're an 8-5 favorite to win this.
Well, when you see the first four guys in my lineup, like Houston Mitchell, who's managing the LA Times, is a great guy and real tech savvy. He goes, I concede.
Yeah,
and he took a harder look at his team and go, okay, we're going to pull this out. But I mean, Henderson, Bonds, DiMaggio, Stargell, Frank Robinson. I mean, geez, oh my goodness, so
well,
great.
It's the old Willie Mays story. You know, Walter Alston. We said to Willie, what should the lineup be for the All-Star game? He says, well, just make it. I'll lead off. And
yeah, then That's it.
Aaron second and Robinson third, and do whatever you want after that.
For me, if Mays leads off, it's already over.
Yeah, really.
How about
right,
the Deep South team? Marty, I got to tell you, the Deep South team I came up with is Mays, McCovey. This is Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi. Mays, McCovey, Aaron, Mel Ott, Lou Brock, Billy Williams, Will Clark, Bo Jackson, Vida, J.R. Richard, Guidry, and Satchel Paige.
Boy,
Come on.
Yeah, this is the, you know, you may have a new career.
If somebody wants to pay me, I'm in.
You could have, this could be the beginning of a new career for you, and you could be writing about this, and all of a sudden, you know, parallel to the, it's the parallel universe, as they like to say.
That's right, that's right. That's where we are right now, so why not?
All right, well, congratulations. I'm into it, and I'm looking forward to, so Tuesday, all right, so Tuesday, in the evening's time, go to sfchronicle.com and you'll get directions on how to do it. Okay, very good.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be too difficult. Hopefully
it is going to be one day at a time, right?
One day at a time.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad we settled that because that, you know, one night wasn't right.
Well, absolutely not. No, not at all. I mean, for guys like Houston and myself or John Shea, you can play a game, an APBA game, in like 15 minutes. But when we got on the horn with an APBA official guy the other day and he ran through it all, he said, the game's probably going to take 45 minutes. So if you want to play the whole best of seven in one night and expect people to hang with it, that's a tough ask. So, it's going to make a lot more sense.
No, we need it. This is what baseball's all about. All right. Let's move on just to in the time we have left, just a couple of baseball items. You wrote about Barry Tompkins over the last week, and two separate articles, I think. One, some of his reminiscing of people he met, and the first one is really his story. I thought it was terrific. I thought it was really good. I'd like to get Barry on the show and have him expound a little more, but I thought you did really well with it.
And you know what? If you got him on, he would tell you a whole different set of stories. I mean, there were so many of them that I didn't have room to use. He's an amazing guy, Marty. He's older than both of us. He's 80. He has no real health issues. He's extremely sharp. He's ready to go on the air with anybody at any time in any sport, you know, anywhere in the world if we could. And I said, well, before I did the interview, I said, well, what are the kinds of things? I don't really want to run down everything you've done, but what are some interesting stories? And he kind of just threw out there that he was in a singing group, and that's it. He said, I was in a singing group for a while. So I kind of pressed him on it. He was in a singing group with Johnny Mathis's brother.
Right.
He's out of high school. He's not even going to college. They're going to try to make this singing group work out of the San Francisco, and next thing you know, they cut a record. You can find it on YouTube, and then they're playing the Apollo in Harlem. I mean, what are you, James Brown? I mean, just the fact that they played there, it didn't last. But I mean, this is why Barry Tompkins was such a sharp guy and was able to connect with people. He talks about connecting with Willie Mays and Mike Tyson and like all the Warriors and so many guys in the fight game who confided in him and asked him over to their house, and they're partying with him, and he would never spill the beans on any of it. He wouldn't go running off and send a friggin' tweet, you know, for the sake of one story and then hang himself for the rest of his life. He just, you know, they knew that he wouldn't let all that stuff out. And meanwhile, he got to know him in ways that really mattered. And all combined with the fact that when he did a broadcast, he stepped aside and let the broadcast carry itself. So I've always found him to be a really interesting guy, and I really had no idea how interesting.
Yeah, terrific stuff. The one I like was the story with Fred Biletnikoff and Kenny Stabler. I mean,
oh my God,
it's a tough one to envision Barry Tompkins at Club 54, Studio 54, whatever.
Yeah, he's in New York for the Raiders and the Jets, and it's a big break for him. He's going to be on the sidelines, I think, for CBS, first sideline NFL job he's ever had. And he's talking to these guys, and they go, yeah, Barry, we're just going to go get some Mexican food and cash it in. Big game tomorrow. So he goes out for Mexican food, and they figure, well, what the heck? We go from there to Studio 54, and as Barry said, and from Studio 54, we went to the game. And they were all just wasted. And it was not a good day for any of them. But, oh, my God, that's just a little bit sign of the times and just hilarious.
Barry, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I reached out to Joan Ryan, who, of course, is your colleague and has her new book out to get, have her
yeah,
on the show
book.
As well
great
as Barry.
Book, Intangibles.
Yeah, I'd like to get them both on the show.
A couple
of baseball things this week. One, it was sort of an interesting article. Jason Stark always has some provocative stuff. I think it was him in The Athletic about the records that may be or may not be set during this 82-game season if we, in fact, have this season. How do you feel about the record book?
I think it's going to be looked at as fairly legitimate. You know, we've had seasons. Yeah, I always look back to 1981. That was my first year on the beat. I covered it February to October, all the way through the playoffs. I was at all the playoffs in the World Series, and when it was all over, the Dodgers are playing the Yankees, okay? Just as it should be. And when you look back on those numbers, even though they lost like 2 months, it doesn't rattle you. You know, that was a legitimate season. 1994, when they called off the World Series, that's a little different. That was completely ludicrous. But still, you see what people were up to, what Tony Gwynn was hitting, the home runs that Matt Williams had, what Montreal was doing. And, you know, it's still a huge body of work. And that's what baseball's all about. If they get into 80 games, you're just barely getting in qualifying there. But the biggest thing of all is that if they actually pull it off, they will have done it in the face of a pandemic with all the anxiety. I'm surely players wishing they weren't there but are afraid to quit on their team. There'll probably be some quarantine, some positive tests, this and that. And to win a title or win the batting title or anything in that context is going to mean a lot. It's going to have a big asterisk on it, but it certainly isn't going to be illegitimate.
Good point. Good point. It's almost like day games to night games and traveling all of a sudden. The difference in the way baseball was played over a 10-year period. There's a real challenge here to what is going to happen. If it doesn't.
Certainly nobody's been through it before.
That's a good point. Okay, so whatever it is that you weathered the storm, so to speak.
You got to have an asterisk on it for sure. I mean, not literally. They don't really put literal asterisks on it. But I mean, you know what happened. I mean, you know, you can make your judgments. But I think whatever is accomplished is something to be honored and not disparaged.
Okay, all right. That's a good. I like the viewpoint. Very good. A couple of things. There were good articles this week. I know, boy, sports writers are really having to be very creative, you included, to come up with the stories about baseball. And the best players not in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if you saw that on MLB.
I did. Yeah,
and
I saw that.
I just thought of three of them in my own mind that come to mind quickly. One is Gil Hodges.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is Minnie Minoso.
Yes.
And the third one maybe is a little bit more of a lightweight, but to me he wasn't, and that's Louis Tiant.
Oh, yeah, I'm in on all those guys. I mean, it's funny, you know, the New York writers weigh so heavily, and Gil Hodges had a terrible World Series for Brooklyn, and they can never get past the Yankees until 55. And it's the only reason I can think of why they wouldn't put Hodges in. And, of course, you know, they had Pee Wee Reese and Jackie Robinson, Duke Snyder and Ferrillo, oh my God, you know, Newcomb. But when the Dodgers moved west, Gil Hodges was an iconic figure. I actually got to meet him one time, and his hands dwarfed mine. I was a little kid, but I mean, his hands were like supernatural. He was the nicest guy in the world, one of the greatest fielding first basemen of all time, and a power hitter on a great team. So yeah, Louis Tiant, absolutely. I don't even need to look at the numbers for him, because what he meant to the game and the way you felt when you watched him and the way he baffled people in the big stage was absolutely great. And Minnie Minoso, he played in like 9 decades. he kept coming back to play in the next decade. But he was a guy, he made an awful big difference, you know, beyond the field. You know, guys from Cuba, when he came in,
right,
that was not an easy hang. It's not like, guys coming in now, Cespedes or Gurriel or something like that. I mean, you had to have fortitude. You had to put up with stuff. And he put up with an awful lot. So I wouldn't have any problem with any of those guys.
Yeah, he was an impact Jackie Robinson type player.
Yeah.
A black Cuban. And you're right. And came in 1951, I think. And You had Mantle, and then when you looked at all the leaderboards, the triples, doubles, stolen bases, getting hit by pitches, whatever it was, he brought that spark to the game.
He was really fun to watch, and that always matters too. He was exciting. You didn't take your eyes off him.
And that's Teon. You explained Teon very well. You know, because you got to argue the 220 for the wins versus 290 or 300. But if you watched him pitch, you didn't need anything else. That was it.
Nope. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
an artist out there.
Yeah, very good. The schedule that could be coming up could be very interesting if, in fact, they do get this together. I have not seen a proposed schedule. I don't know how they would do it. I know there'll be NL West, AL West, and there'll be a lot of geographical matchups. You could have the A's playing the Giants 20 times.
Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to that. Just for the, you know, anything that's convenient, you're going to have to like because of it. Sort of minimizes what could go wrong. You know, I think. I mean, you never really know what's going on. But on the flip side, both of these teams are going to be playing Houston, and that's about as inconvenient as it gets. I'd rather fly to New York than Houston. It takes like 4 hours, and it's always more like six. And then you get there, and you're a million miles from anywhere, and It's a horrible place, really.
That's going to be the challenge of the travel, because everything else is sort of West Coast.
Yeah,
you know, within an hour or two, maybe each way, unless you went to San Diego to Seattle. But that's going to be the challenge, is Houston, Dallas, to see him. But let's see. But it's going to be interesting. 14 playoff teams. You know, I think you said it best, and it's probably a good column for you, the challenge that baseball has, even under the best of circumstances, if this works, to make it work. It's not simple.
Yeah, I would dearly love for them to get to the playoffs, to actually get to the postseason where it looks like the environment they've created is working, and we've got a chance to finish this off. I think the odds are really long. I think it's too soon, but I'm also an incurable optimist and a baseball guy, and I want to believe that it does work, can work, and against the odds. And if they get to that point, it's going to be great. I mean, by that point, a lot of fans will have made up their mind. Everyone will have made up their mind about what it's like to watch with no fans in the stands, and a lot of people will have cashed it in by then and said, forget it. But I think people who really love the game will have sort of gotten past that, you know, appreciate what it means to hear the game, the pop of the glove, the crack of the bat, the talk, and all that stuff. And so there's definitely potential for it working.
Yep.
I just pray that it will.
Yeah, we all do. This is a big week or two coming up here to see how they structure all that. So it's time to deal with it. As we end this one, sort of on a happier note or lighter note, Scott Osler, I mentioned it to you earlier, I had a great column about spring training in HANA. And the San Francisco Seals, they played in 1946. They played in Honolulu, four games against the A's in 1947. Paul Fagan owned all this land in Hana, and he took the Seals there for spring training. How about that?
What a concept. I mean, I've done that drive just once. Once is good.
That's enough.
you're almost driving into the ocean several times. I mean,
true.
You've got to get a bunch of private planes landing on an airstrip out there if you're going to do this. You cannot have everybody driving out there on that treacherous Highway 30, I think it is. And, you know, once you get there, you know, I think it would be great. Who knows? I mean, how do the people of HANA would be horrified? All of a sudden, everyone is descending on their little private paradise, so... I think, and it's certainly not now the way it was then in terms such a thing would be perceived, but it's a nice thought. Osler, that's vintage Osler coming up with something that we'd all forgotten about that's worth thinking about.
Yeah, it was good. It was very colorful, and Paul Fagan owned the Seals in those days, and he really tried to get the PCL to be a third major league, but it wasn't going to happen. But he had the ideas and a lot of renovations, but the worst thing he did was he banned the selling of peanuts at the ballpark. And that lasted that lasted 3 days because they didn't want to clean up the shells. And there was such a protest that he gave in on that.
Yeah, next thing you know, no hot dogs or beer, you know?
So that's what baseball is all
about. We have beets and we have tripe for you.
That's about it. And sushi. You can get sushi there. All right. Well, look, enjoy Saturday night. And you have a big week coming up, and there's going to be a lot to talk. Let's see, a seven-game series. Where would we be? Will it be over next Saturday? It may not be over.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You'll be glad to know, Marty, that in this mythical world, we're having the opener at Seal Stadium. So that's a very appropriate way, I think, to kick the thing off. You know, in your mind, you're imagining the 58 Giants coming out here, and DiMaggio and Lefty O'Doul, it is going to be fun. I'm under a ton of pressure. I'm sweating right now. I'm going to change my shirt when this is over.
What stadium are they using in L.A.?
Well, you know, Marty, it's funny because when I came up with my plan, I had Seals, Oaks Park, Gilmore Field, home of the Hollywood Stars, Wrigley Field, home of the L.A. Angels, the L.A. Coliseum, Jack Murphy Stadium, and, you know, like Big Wreck. I didn't even get to a big league park, and they go, well, you know, I get that, but, you know, how many fans are really going to be able to draw a mental picture with all that? And it was minor league after all. They kind of talked me out of it, and I think they're right. So after Seal Stadium, we're going to go to Candlestick. It'll be a day game, no wind. It'll be a 12 noon start, beautiful day at Candlestick. Then we're going to go for the three games in the middle down there. We're going to go to Dodger Stadium, Angel Stadium, and Petco in San Diego. Then we're going to come back to Oakland before Mount Davis. You'll be able to see the Oakland Hills. It'll be very nice. And then Game 7 at Oracle if we go that far.
All right. I just want to, in my mind, I'm picturing Walter Johnson standing on the mound at Petco. That I'm trying to.
I would much prefer him at Oaks Park, and I know you love that original plan, but it didn't fly. It is a little bit on the extreme, but maybe you and I will play that tournament.
All right, yeah, I'm just having trouble with the image of him at Petco.
Yeah,
looking around, saying, "What happened?"
Yeah. Well, right. He should. He's an Orange County guy. He should pitch at Angel Stadium, but he might be a little disoriented there too.
Yeah, he was from Kansas to Fullerton, I think.
Yeah, Kansas to Fullerton,
something like that.
And how many times do you see it? A guy goes from a farm in Kansas to Fullerton High School.
His father wasn't his father in the oil fields or something?
I think so. Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of organized ball there, but he got to Orange County and really, did he take off?
Well, pleasure talking with you. Enjoy it, and we will absolutely follow this starting Tuesday night, sfchronicle.com, and then each succeeding night until someone wins a World Series. Very good.
Beautiful. Good luck. Next
all
week
right.
We'll see how it all worked out.
All right, Bruce. Take care.
Thanks, man.
All right, that is Bruce Jenkins. Wow, what a story. All right, we've got a full show ahead for you, so sit back and relax on this Saturday night. Kyle Haynes is going to join us, a player development director for the Giants. We've got Grant Power coming up, the president and CEO of Nations, and great story about Nations and their new spot up in Sacramento, Thomas. Alex Pavlovich from NBC Bay Area. Dale Tafoya on his new book, Billy Ball. Barry Bloom, he's got a new spot at Sportico.com. Mark Simon from Sports Info Solutions. And, of course, the great Kerry Crowley coming up next. So we've got a good show for you on this Memorial Day weekend. And as I say, let's just sit back and enjoy it. And don't forget PaveFineJewelry.com. Spoke to Michael Enlick this week. Check it out online. There's some virtual things that are going on, maybe some curbside things that can be happening. But as I've said so many times about Pave, P-A-V-E, finejewelry.com, no one better than Michael for jewelry design and for service and for those great, great keepsakes for the rest of your life than Michael Enlick at Pave Fine Jewelry. All right, more coming up. Raph doing a great job. Thank you, everybody, for being with us tonight. Big show coming up right after this on The Sports Leader.